They wanted us to sit here and pause so that they could get a still shot of us smiling. I tried to hold his hand, but he won't do it. I know it's ridiculous.
Thing.
I know.
It's all right.
So,
I'm married.
Enough done with the fluff. Time to get hardcore.
Okay.
So hold my hand. No, so I'm scared.
Can we cut? Can we go back? You're going to edit this out, right?
No. Yeah, I know. So now we want to look at, we want to kind of deep dive on, and I think this is one of the most more complicated roles. So this is going to be the client access server. We also want to look at some of the client stuff. So let me bring up the slide here. We're going to go into deploying and managing client access server and the clients. And specifically, we want to just do an overview of the client access server. Things have changed a little bit, configuring that client access server and managing some of those services. This is actually a little bit more complicated than it looks on this slide. And then a couple of the features, like one of the things is kind of fun things is the mail tip stuff. But then kind of stopping by, taking a look at Outlook web app. It's got some new features in it, dealing with mobile devices. And this is the area where we want to talk about some of those magical things like auto discover and how Outlook works. So we've got a lot of good stuff and a lot of good work to do here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tricky one though. I mean, it's DNS records, it's certificates, it's, this is gonna be a fast-paced, heavy demo, kind of hardcore setup.
So talk as slow as you can.
I'm just trying to throw out there. And as we go further throughout the day, we're getting more and more.
I know, it's, so, but you're right. This is
no, I mean, this is gonna be one where we're going through it fast, and it's going to take some getting used to in the lab. Certificates are always tough.
Certificates are tough.
Just want to throw that out there. This is a pretty serious.
Yeah, and guys, so the complexity level here gets pretty, well, how about if we stop talking about it, we just do it? What do you say? So here we go. Client access server. Now, this is a kind of a nice little slide of clients, you know, hitting the client access server, which I have marked as CAS here. We've got clients coming from the outside and also internal clients. And one of the biggest things, especially if you come from much older versions of Exchange, is all clients. POP, IMAP, POP, wait a minute, I just got stuck. POP, IMAP, HTTPS, which is Outlook web app, and Outlook, everything goes through the CAS. Oh my God, it's like cats and dogs living together. What do you mean Outlook goes through
dogs
the CAS?
And cats. Dogs
talks
and cats.
To cats. Yeah. Yeah, because here's the thing. Doesn't Outlook do this mappy RPC thing to a server? Or what's the deal going on internally with Outlook clients?
Yeah, the whole point is to have all of that tunneled through HTTP. So you've had that in the past externally with Outlook Anywhere or even back.
Yeah, Outlook Anywhere did the RPC into HTTP thing.
Even as far back as 2003, right. SP2 or whatever it was, we had this. So the same concept, but you know, RPC works a lot better when it's encapsulated in HTTP, which is a much more resilient protocol to latency, drop packets, that kind of thing. So it makes the experience better for clients. It makes us easier to get stuff across the network because HTTP is generally more resilient and firewall-friendly.
Firewall-friendly is the big thing, right?
Absolutely.
Because RPC just turns your firewall into Swiss cheese.
Yeah, we can still proxy other protocols through CAS, so not just HTTP.
But the internal clients, I'm right in saying that a long time ago, we used to do all this RPC mappy stuff to a mailbox server, but not anymore. Now we're, even internal clients are doing RPC over HTTP to the CAS.
Yeah, if you looked at your Outlook profile in 2007, in Exchange 2007, you connected to the mailbox server role. That was the endpoint for Outlook. That was the RPC endpoint. 2010, we changed that to CAS. So in 2010, we put all of that rendering and data logic at that layer. 2013, we're now kind of connecting through CAS, hitting the mailbox server. So things have changed.
So what do you see in...
Now when you look in the profile, it's a lot different. We'll show that.
You have to show it because I think that's... Let's go ahead and by the way, some things to point out is that the CAS box doesn't store any data itself. It's not holding mail, right?
That's the, you know, the biggest architectural change and one of the biggest benefits is the fact that you can bump from one CAS to another. All the state information is on the back end mailbox where your mailbox is active. So I can be connected through a load balanced pool of CAS servers. If I go from CAS 1 to CAS 2, who cares? Because the state is actually on mailbox server one on the back.
And this is actually a huge improvement to 2013, right? That the CAS boxes are stateless. And so when we get to high availability and we start looking at things I know some of you are already asking questions in the chats about load balancing CAS. We're going to talk about that. But the fact that it's stateless really makes this much easier now.
Yeah, it makes load balancing way easier.
Makes the load balancing way easier. So, well, let's go ahead and get started with configuring the client access server. And maybe you can give us kind of a tour at the same time that we're looking at this stuff. The virtual directory, the authentications for CAS, you know, that kind of stuff. And setting up the namespace. And, of course, we're also going to want to look at certificates. But, you know, let's start off with, you know, a demonstration basically of the virtual directories and the namespace and the authentication stuff, if you can.
Sure. Yeah, this is, so you're going to be in the admin center for this. This is one of those things where, you know, you might script some of this stuff. Sometimes you might find it's easier to do in the GUI. It just depends. But there's a lot of work that's going to have to be done because you have to configure each server. So each CAS server, if you're load balancing 2, 3, 4, whatever, it's that many times you have to do some kind of configuration. That's the same with certificates. It's the same with modifying some of these directories. So if we come over here under servers, we come over virtual directories, and I'm going to have all servers picked, and we get this huge list of stuff. So let's just let's scope this down to the first Exchange 2013 server. So
okay,
basically,
I can see there. It gives me the name. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So we have various applications that run an IIS to service all of these needs. ECP is now the EAC. EWS is Exchange Web Services. This does all kinds of stuff. One of the big ones is availability. But it's also the endpoint for, you know, all of the third-party clients that want to connect to Exchange. They use that web service. So we've got Microsoft Server Active Sync. That's where your phone goes.
For the mobile clients.
Your mobile clients. Offline address book, so your cache clients can have a gal to work with when they're offline working on a plane or whatnot. And then OWA, of course, as we know, is Outlook Web App or Outlook Web Access, as you may have known it in the past. So these are all hanging under one IIS site.
You're forgetting my favorite one. Don't miss my favorite one.
Oh, yeah, and in PowerShell.
Because that's the one that you were connecting to, right? Do the implicit remoting.
Yeah, exactly. And these are all out there.
These are virtual directories off the default website in IIS. You could see these through the IIS manager, but quite honestly, since they're listed here and this gives you the Exchange properties for them, this is probably the best place to look at them and to be able to make some changes. So go ahead.
So, and then the reason you're so interested in modifying these is by default, let's just pick like OWA. So look at the properties. You come in here, you can see that we've got this concept of internal and external URLs.
Yeah.
And by default, when I installed Exchange or CAS on this server, we populated the internal URL with the host name of that server. So really what I want to get to is a point where I've got multiple CAS servers all answering under one common name, mail.contoso.com. That goes to my two CAS servers. If one CAS server dies, the other one can just service those users, and we keep on trucking.
Now, are you saying that also for the internal?
Yeah, for the internal, because we're going to get two sets of URLs depending on where we're sitting. If we're on the inside network, we'll get the internal URL. If we go outside, we can't talk to Active Directory. Outlook will know, oh, let's use the external configuration. A lot of times, what my customers do and what we usually recommend is that you use split DNS. So split DNS would mean that if I change this to mail.contoso.com and put an external URL value in with the same exact value, that would mean that when I'm on the inside network, mail.contoso.com resolves to perhaps a load balancer's virtual IP address.
Internally,
like 192.168,
so
something like that.
Let's just take a second and make sure everybody's got this split DNS thing down.
Yeah, it's a little, it can be
confusing. This is going to get a little tricky. So split DNS is where you have your public-sided DNS, and you still have internal DNS, but it has your public domains in it as well. So in the case of what we're doing here with this internal is for your internal users, in case you have an internal load balance because you have multiple CAS, this is kind of a fault-tolerant thing, is that you want all of the URLs to be the same, mail.contoso.com, and that's going to need to be on the inside of your DNS for your internal users using the internal load balanced address. Externally, though, you're going to have to put that in DNS, and that's going to have to be on the external side,
that might resolve to an externally facing load balancer. It might go to something like a TMG server, or some other kind of reverse proxy infrastructure that's accepting those connections from the outside and then sending them inbound to Exchange.
Now tell me, it doesn't fill in the external one all by itself. What if you don't fill in an external one?
Then it's going to hand you the internal URL.
Oh, now it's going to hand you.
Yeah, and if you don't configure it, it's going to hand you the individual server URL, right? And now you've got a single point of failure. Right? You're going to one server name. And if you're on the outside, you're probably not exposing that internal name to the outside.
But if we do it this way, then the internal one would get handed and it would still...
Yeah, and you know, we've got customers that use separate URLs on the inside versus the outside. You may be in that situation. You know, this all gets very tricky because if you look here, we're doing HTTPS. You want to encrypt this traffic. We want to secure it. The certificate needs to be trusted from the client that's connecting to this application. So Outlook's going to get this information from AutoDiscover. It's just going to feed it to them.
Which we're going to get to
AutoDiscover. Yeah, we'll get to that. But you're going to get this information. In order for you to make a secure connection to this website, not only does the certificate need to be trusted, but also the name here needs to be on the certificate.
To match on the cert.
So if you've got something like ad.internal in here, and you're wanting to use HTTPS, in a couple years, I think it's, I don't know if it's 2015 or 2016, commercial certificate authorities are going to stop issuing certificates with internal names on the cert.
So this is a good idea. If you're not doing this now, this is actually
a good
idea.
Time to start thinking about
and
it.
And also, if you're getting like a SAN cert or something, it certainly reduces the...
Right.
You know, because you're not doing the internals anymore. This is actually great information for this.
And now, it's not easy to get right. And if you screw it up, sometimes it won't connect. Sometimes it's just nagging, depending on the application, with a certificate warning. Mm-hmm. Then people are calling the help desk saying, hey, I can get into Outlook, but I'm also getting a pop-up. And it's just as a warning, it still works. How do you get rid of that? That's the tricky part about this. So that's what we're going to take a look at. But the thing is you make it easy on yourself by using Split DNS. Right?
Right.
And then we have basically a reduced number of namespaces in 2013 as a requirement. You know, you can potentially just have two namespaces, like mail.contoso.com and autodiscover.contoso.com, covering multiple sites, whereas previously our recommendation was, hey, use site-specific namespaces.
Site-specific ones, yeah.
Because really, we, you know, there's a couple of reasons, but one of the big ones is we're not doing cross-site RPC anymore. Everything's encapsulated in HTTP
in terms of
the mailbox data access. So that changes things dramatically. And the fact that there's no state information saved on CAS means I can hop from one data center to the other. And as long as the DNS is resolving to that location, who cares?
Who cares?
So
now, is there any authentication stuff that we need to worry about for
Yeah,
this?
So, you know, I've modified this one a little bit for OWA. OWA and ECP are both going to use this one. So by default, it was set up here to domain/username. I'm lazy, so I changed it to just username.
Oh, and you pre-filled in the domain.
And okay. I picked the logon domain of contoso.com. So when you install Exchange, you'll get this, but you'll have it with this first setting here. So I changed that. All right, so we'll leave that, okay? And then we're going to save this. Now remember, I'm just doing this on one server, and this is one application on one server. So I've got a lot of work to do here. So I'm going to save this.
So you actually have to do this on servers.
Yeah.
And this is just OWA.
This is just one app. And this will show up in the backstage area of Outlook. When you go into that file tab in the newer versions of Outlook, it'll say, hey, here's your OWA address. And if you forget to do this URL, or you didn't put the name on the cert, and then you click the URL, and you go and you get the warning, and it's confusing. So watch out for that. So I'm just going to set this real quick. I'm going to save this. And I'm going to run through the rest of these at lightning speed if I can. So it's basically saying here, hey, you did this for OWA. Please make the same change.
Make sure you make the same change.
Use the same names, right? So let's do ECP next. Come over here. Do this guy.
Dump, 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 dump.
We're just getting warmed up here. So this is, all right, so we'll do mail here. And again, this is going to inherit what was on the OWA virtual directory. It's just telling you that. Hey, we're using the same settings.
It's using the same settings.
So from there, that's pretty much all the authentication stuff that I need to think about on this one. And basically, I want to format these URLs in a way that my clients are going to get handed these by AutoDiscover. You know, and I've got a mail record I already created in both my internal and external DNS that resolves to the right place. Internally, it's going to a load balancer.
It's going to a load balancer.
So it'll distribute those connections to CAS. And the ones that I'm really concerned about are like the ECP, EWS, ActiveSync, all the ones that Outlook might try to connect to. Because otherwise, you know, it's going to potentially be a wrong name. I didn't do the DNS record, or I didn't do the certificate. So let's just run through the rest of these guys real quick.
Yeah, we definitely, so you got to change them all.
Yeah, you want to change them all. I mean, you don't need to change, you can't even change the AutoDiscover virtual directory, because that just works.
Right.
There's a different thing we got to do for that. We'll look at that. The PowerShell one doesn't matter, because your clients aren't going to get AutoDiscover for PowerShell. Did I miss any on that one?
You got OWA, OAB, you got ActiveSync, you got EWS and ECP. You did them all.
And if you run through and highlight them, you can see on the right pane over here that it shows you a preview.
That it shows you, which is a great way to make sure that you hit them all.
Yeah. And now you can go here, hop over to this guy, and I'll do these ones. And I'm just going to do what I did before.
That's right. So you, this is a great time for when you want to consider bulk administration through PowerShell.
This would be a good time to write a script.
PowerShell, yeah.
I mean, especially time for a script. If you build CAS servers and add CAS servers on a regular basis,
yeah.
Or you're doing a deployment of huge pools of CAS servers, this is a really good use case for a script. You could write, each one of these applications actually gets a different commandlet in the PowerShell world. So there's set OWA virtual directory. Actually, I got to get out of this one. I messed it up. There's set OWA virtual directory, set web services virtual directory, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So each one of these has a different commandlet, and you know, you have to target every individual server, so you have to write a fairly long script, but pretty straightforward.
But hey, if you're doing this in bulk, it would certainly...
Yeah.
If you're doing one or two, graphical's fine, but you know, if you're going to want to be able to maintain this going forward, it sure be nice.
And I kind of thought about, for this, writing a script and showing that, but I don't just want to blast some script by and you're like, hey, what just happened? So I'll show you this manually, and now you can go write the script after you watch the PowerShell jumpstart.
That's really good.
Yeah. Like, so how I worked that in there?
I like how you worked that in there. Very nice on the marketing. So as you're finishing this up, the next thing is going to be what you're talking about. You've created these URLs. You're using split DNS, but you've got this great URL going, mail.contoso.com, and you kept saying, look, we're going to need a trusted certificate for this. So we gotta
that's right.
Get a certificate on this. So when you're done, how do we get a new certificate on Exchange? Now, did I mention I was a web guy?
I know that you're a web guy.
I'm a web guy, and that means that I know how to do it through IIS. Should I go through IIS and do the certificates if I know how on Exchange, or should I not do that?
Oh, you want to do your certificates through the Exchange tools. Let Exchange handle this for you.
Let Exchange handle this for you.
I know you can go into IIS, and you're perfectly capable of setting up a certificate request.
Guys,
and installing that certificate.
Fun of me now. He's I know you're perfectly good at IIS.
Hey, I knew you wrote the book. And I need to get a copy of that book, by the way. Signed copy.
Yeah, we showed everybody your book. I just want to point out, you know, he did the Exchange part and he didn't even bring me a copy. Anyways, back to certificates. So we want to do the certificates through the Exchange. Now there are commandlets for this as well, right? So
there are commandlets, but the GUI for me is much easier because you can do you can ask for a new certificate, basically generate a request, take that request to a commercial certificate authority where you pay a few bucks, they give you a trusted cert that works everywhere.
So a commercial certificate authority, which would be like, guys, put a camera on me. Since the Microsoft guy won't say it, it would be a commercial certificate authority like VeriSign, GoDaddy, you know. What we're talking about, but you need a trusted certificate with these URLs, so you got to go to a trusted authority, which means you're gonna have to pay out some money. Now there are, you can just use a standard high assurance cert, but if you want, you know, if this was more commercial sided, you can get an extended validation cert, but really for all the Exchange stuff, I think a high assurance cert is probably good enough.
You'll see them referred to as unified communication certificate, UCC cert.
UCC cert.
And if you have a bunch of names you need to put on there, you know, we're just gonna do auto discover and mail. Contoso.com. Okay. But I've gone just from the virtual directories tab, one tab over to certificates. So I'm still here in the EAC.
So we're at certificates.
My servers are multi-role, CAS, mailbox, combo. So want to point out, if you're doing CAS only front-end servers, do the certificates there, the ones that you're going to purchase. Leave the back-end self-signed ones alone, because CAS will talk to mailbox regardless of what the status is on the certificate. Who cares if it's not trusted, it's self-signed, I don't care. I just want to encrypt data. I don't care about authenticating this connection.
Let me ask you a quick question, because I get guys that'll say, well, we have Active Directory certificate services internally.
Right.
Can we have that issue certificates for the internal stuff? Just because they don't want the self-signed
sure.
ones.
Sure, as long as there's something, that would mean either that needs to be trusted by clients.
Right.
Or
they would have to trust
put
it
a public cert on like an internet-facing reverse proxy or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So get me a cert, man.
Let's do this. So the cool thing is I create the cert on the first server, and then I can import it on all the rest of my CAS. Or I can do one first, export, and then import on all of them, all in the GUI.
Really?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Okay.
So let's go. We're on certificates. We're on 2013A. We're going to do plus for a new certificate request. Now, it's basically saying, you know, we don't want to do self-signed because that's not going to be trusted. We want to do a request that we're going to take to one of those third parties. Now, when we create the request, we got to give it a name. This does not matter.
Yeah, this is the
whatever
friendly
you want.
Name.
This so is just this what is you want to what, see when you're in
so,
there.
Yeah,
so it makes sense to you.
Something for us to make sense.
Right.
With.
Now, we can do wildcard here, which means something like star.contoso.com.
Right.
I'm typically, since I'm from the old school, tend to use all of the names explicitly. Exchange is pretty good with wildcards. You know, it's really the legacy older clients that you have to worry about here. But, you know, product groups like Link, you know, they still like you to not use wildcards if possible. So.
Well, and I know all the security guys, you know Mike Dansiglio. He would be jumping up and down, punching us in the knees right now if we were talking about...
Well, he'd be punching him in the knees by standing.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's his, because he's... Anyways, you know, he's only about... Anyways,
yeah,
but
he's just a
the security
guy.
Guys have, you know, wildcard search, there is a possibility of hacking with the wildcard search. So a lot of people like more of a subject alternative name, sans cert, where you're being very specific about the names on the certs.
So let's do that. We'll hit next. We'll skip this screen. We're going to store the request on the box that we're on right now. So we're just going to pick a server, say okay to that. Hit next. Now, what we need to do here is...
Oh, well, look at all of that.
It's picking up all these names based on what we populated in the virtual directories.
Okay, so this
So you could sit here and kind of go crazy on this screen. You can go through and say, what do I need to do? Like, if you did your URLs first, you did some namespace planning, right, ahead of time. You knew what names you're going to use. Now, when you come in here, you don't really have to think a whole lot, because you've set up your virtual directories.
Oh, since you've already done the namespace planning like we did in the right order, then I like the part where you said I don't have to think much now because I'm good at that.
Because my head's already hurting because I'm like four screens into this wizard.
Right.
Yeah, so stop making me think, right? So here's what I usually do here. I don't spend any time on this screen, even if I haven't done any planning. This is what I do. And I'm not saying this is right for everybody, but let me just show you this. Hit next. This is what it's outputting. This is your list. The one that's bold.
Oh, I see.
The one that's bold, that's going to be the subject name on the cert.
On the cert.
And all of the other ones
important.
Are going to be alternates. And typically what I do is and this is a best practice that we actually recommend from the product group. We don't recommend, Microsoft doesn't recommend putting too many names on here, right? It's going to cost you. It's also going to be confusing. We don't need any names on here that no one's ever going to connect to.
Right.
I never told Exchange to connect to this.
So
the individual
that's
server
right.
name.
You got rid of all the internal URLs that had that, so you could actually get rid of that.
Right. So I'm gonna nuke everything in here that isn't gonna be connected to by a client.
And so the only thing, because you changed the URLs in the namespace portion, is mail.contoso, and we've got auto discover.
That's it.
Wow, you made that real list really simple.
Yeah, and in 2013, potentially you could do multi-site resiliency with just two namespaces, versus 2010 where you might have had seven because you had all kinds of names.
That's correct.
So this is much easier. So, you know, if you needed to populate more, just add them to the list. You can just type them right in. You don't have to use that previous screen, although it's a nice one if you're not sure what to do. Anyways, we're good there. We're going to hit next. Now we'll fill out all the stuff. This is Contoso.
Your name, right.
This is all just what you need to fill in. There's no right answer here. It's just based on your information. So sped through that. That's good. Hit next. Now, this is the confusing part. All of this other stuff wasn't the confusing part. This is the problem. So the thing about the web-based tool, right, even the PowerShell or even the old console, was that it's running remote PowerShell. So it's not real easy for me to implement, save this to the C drive, because it's really executing on the server.
On the server.
And I might be on the beach, right,
on
with the martini.
Beach. Right.
And all that.
Oh, no, definitely martini.
I need to tell Exchange, hey, put the request on a share that you can get to and I can't, right? Potentially. Really what it is the Exchange server is executing the commands for you on your behalf.
Right.
But we have to have a share for that.
And guys, the reason that this portion is so confusing is because if you're not accustomed to working with PowerShell remoting, which is basically we're doing remoting, this stuff is executing on the server, not my client. So if I say the C drive, that's kind of like, what? So what he wants you to do is have this all set up as a share that we all have access to and just put in the UNC for it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So what we need to do here is, we probably would have wanted to do this at the beginning, but we can stop here in the wizard, come over to the C drive.
Oh, are you going to make a share?
We need to make a share.
Nice.
Otherwise, it's never going to work.
No, I like it.
So
okay,
let's
cool.
create a new one.
This is like a server guy.
I'm going to keep the theme of my very descriptive names. We'll call it share. And then
you're a lot of fun at parties. I meant to mention you're kind of...
You know, I've seen the names you use in your lab, so I'm not trying to go there. All right, so Let's go over to sharing, advanced sharing. So typical, you know, file share stuff. Give everybody, give everyone full control. And now the Exchange server is really the thing executing the command.
The thing.
Yeah, and that's who needs permissions to this share. Okay. Not you. That we took care of that with RBAC. We'll talk about how that works. But you come over to the NTFS security. Yeah, you come over to NTFS, you know, the security. You say, all right, Exchange, all the Exchange servers, when you do these install, they automatically get added to a security group called Exchange Trusted Subsystem.
Which is important, right? An important subgroup to keep in mind.
That's right. So give that group full control. When the Exchange server tries to write a file into that share,
he'll be able to do it.
If I put my name in here, who cares?
Yeah,
really. You're not the one running the command.
And I think, I have to tell you, I think that that's what's confused a lot of people is they don't get what PowerShell Remoting is doing. So they think that they're the ones that need the permissions and it just doesn't work.
So here I type in the server information, ex2013a/share. And I want to give it a name of, you know, cert.req.request. Okay? So that's going to create that file. And as long as I didn't blow anything up along the way, hey, no errors. So if we look in the folder, there's our little file.
That's the request. And that's
the request.
That's that ugly looking thing.
Yeah. We take this request to our certificate authority. We tell them, hey, we want to buy a certificate. We paste this thing in. Comes back out with the names we put on there and all that good stuff. All the organization information gets populated, all that. So to demo this in the lab, obviously I'm not going to go to a third party. I've got the internal certificate authority set up, like you said.
You have ADCS set up?
Yeah.
Oh, you've made me excited.
Yeah, I just went through the wizard. Just click next, 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 and then hit finish.
No, that's what you tell me when it's the IIS. Yeah. I just went, don't you just click the install button and walk away? What is it, a master?
Isn't it just a website? Yeah. But so the server name is like super long and I don't remember it, so I'm going to use the IP here.
But, is that the complete IP?
Yeah. It's 192.168. No, it's not, actually. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
Man, you got the eagle eye.
Let me go. That's not going to work. You want to bet a
dollar? Yeah, I should have bet you a dollar on that. No, you're right. So slash cert SRV. You know, but you can think about going to this page with your request like you would think of it going to one of those other guys.
One of those other guys. I like that. And folks,
not that there's anything wrong with
that. Why he's doing this is ADCS is also, if you have a lab environment that you want to set up, ADCS is pretty simple and straightforward to get set up for a lab environment. Don't do it in production unless you know a lot about PKI infrastructure. But for a lab environment, you can have this same thing where you can set up ADCS and issue out the group policy for auto enrollment on your clients so you can simulate this exact same process.
Yep. So I'm going to do a request. We're going to do an advanced request. We're going to submit a second link here. I'm going to paste in that request.
Which is this, you would have handed now your credit card to your third party. And
they would have made sure that it's a web server.
It's a web server.
And if you are doing this internally, make sure you pick web server, otherwise it won't work. I'm going to hit submit, and then you're going to get an error.
I don't even know what that error is. Your certificate request was denied.
Yeah. Let's try this again. Just run through it real quick.
Advanced there. Did you get the whole request in?
I thought
check
I
the
did.
Top. Oh, yeah, it looks like it's the whole request.
Error constructing or public. You know what I'm going to do? Let me try something a little sneaky. Let's do this.
Yeah, usually, guys, this works just perfect, 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 perfect.
I don't know the name of the actual service on the domain controller that runs the certificate services to restart it remotely, but I'm going to restart that service.
Okay. Oh, that's probably a good idea. Because I
let's restart this service, right?
Yeah, because normally this just works.
And this piece, you know, if you're working with a third-party vendor, this isn't going to be an issue. Let's try this again. Request, advanced, submit, paste, web server. Yay.
Yay.
Okay, so just forget the last 30 seconds. Nothing to see here. Just
nothing
move
to
along.
See here. Move along. These are not the certificates you're looking for.
So here I'm just going to download the certificate. The server already trusts the authority. Right? It's
okay.
An Active Directory. ADCS, so he's all trusted and good to go there. So save my certificate back in the share.
And back into the share.
I got to read it out, right? So here's cert new. I'm just going to leave the defaults because I'm lazy. And we downloaded it from the vendor. So now we can come back over to...
Ooh, here's the exciting part.
Yeah, my screen.
It's slightly... I know what it is. It's cool. This is cool. This
where
is cool.
Where did my... see, this is where I start getting disorganized. Where is my window from before? Did I lose it?
What? I don't know. That one
is. Oh, no, we had to. That's right. We already requested it. Sorry. Okay.
Okay, trying so to you remember got a pending request. Okay.
Yeah, now we're going to complete the pending
and
request.
Now complete it. We do the same thing.
Man, it's a lot of steps, man.
I'm just saying, we can do all of
it. Yeah, right.
I'm just saying. So now okay. It's complete.
Now right. Now we're ready to complete this request and activate this guy. So okay. I'm going to hit complete. We're going to type that path, ex2013a/share/ certnew.ce.
Certnew, yeah.
Sounds good, right? Valid. Perfect.
Yay!
So now this is the point where people install it and then they go to the browser and then it errors on them with the, well, gives them the warning. And they're like, why isn't this working? So the problem is you need to still assign the services to the certificate.
Okay, this is the part that
and people
really
rip their
off.
Hair out. There's a reason I'm bald, right?
I was going to say the two of us have
ripped all the hair out of my head troubleshooting this kind of stuff. So you still have
really
stuff to do.
Part.
Right.
Yeah.
You still have to come in here. And you still have to go to services
assign the certificates to them. Okay.
So this CAS is, you know, it's not doing any UM stuff. I'm going to leave the self-sign stuff for the SMTP. I don't care about that. I'm really just worried about the client connections. So I'll mark those services, hit save. Now that certificate is up and running on the server.
On this server.
Right. So let's kill this browser. Let's go back and start a new one. And we'll go to our shared name, so https://mail.contoso.com/ECP.
Oh, we're gonna test it.
/exch client ver equals 15. This is on the test later, so don't forget about that. I think we're good. So we should get to this without a certificate warning, right?
Doom doom. Doom doom. Doom doom. Do 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 do.
So see, it's just a couple wizards. There you go.
Hey!
So we get the little lock icon.
Cert, there's our cert. Nice.
So sign back in.
Now
still
you
not
have
done.
To go and do it to the other servers though, right?
That's right. That's actually not that hard. So check this out. And I'm on, if you ever did this in 2007, Exchange 2007, it was all command line. It was all PowerShell.
It was all PowerShell, yeah.
And you can do this all now in the graphical. And it's easy to do the first server in here. And then it's easy to move on and do the rest. So this is how you would do it. You would do that, all that stuff that we just did on the first server. You'd come in here, highlight that guy, export it.
Export it, yep. And this will make a PFX, right?
That's right. Okay. So we're going to put it back out there. Same share. It's a different name this time. Share, so we'll call it cert.pfx.
And you have to give it a password.
We'll give it a password. And the reason we want to do this is because we want to export the private key with this certificate and then import that certificate on every CAS. If you think about it, if I'm connected to CAS1 and I've authenticated there, I've encrypted authentication cookies there, and then I suddenly fail over to CAS2, if he's got a different cert, can't decrypt that cookie.
Right.
So we want to use the same cert on every CAS server that all have the same private key, so if you just hop around from one CAS to the other, it doesn't matter. All right, so we'll save this out there. That worked. So now what I can do is I can do an import.
So you would go to the different servers.
Yeah, you can actually pick them all in the list. And then, what did I call it? Cert.pfx.
See, I was paying attention to you.
You did.
It's later on today.
I'm not even paying attention to me.
I know.
Okay, next. Now you can pick the whole list of the 20 CAS servers that you have in your environment.
This is much better. Oh, this is awesome.
Isn't
that
nice?
You have a ton of, oh, yeah.
So
I
now
like
if you had five more. They're all basically going to be imported after this, and
you just
assign the services when you're done. All right, as long as this doesn't bomb out on you. If it bombs out on you, you probably mistyped the share. You probably didn't share it outright, something like that.
This is nicer than 2010. I mean, this is actually kind of nice to do through.
And if
graphical.
You wanted to go crazy and script it, you can. But this is one of those ones where actually the bulk administration and the GUI
is
faster.
Yeah. It's faster to do.
So the only thing that I need to do now is hop over to B and assign my services.
And assign the services, which is a very common mistake to forget to do.
So IMAP pop.
And I'm glad you're doing IMAP and pop because I want you to show everybody as soon as we're done with this cert how to turn on pop and IMAP if they need it.
Right. So we've done a couple things, certificates and virtual directories that we can see. We're going to talk about auto discover. But there's also another URL that you don't see in here that you need to configure.
Uh-oh. It's not on my list. It's not on my list.
Let me show real quick.
Okay.
Okay? It's another virtual directory kind of sort of thing. So Git client access server.
Okay, should we like mark this in the video, you know, with everybody that this is super special, Mike Pfeiffer?
Well, it's just something you'll hit. It's okay. Important. Yeah, I mean, you need to know about this. This isn't like a secret. This is actually in the deployment assistant. We'll show this at the end when we go through the upgrades and all that, the migration stuff. But if we look at this, let's just make sure this works. I just want to look at the 2013 servers.
Okay.
I want to format as a list and look at, there's a property called the auto discover service internal URI that's also going to get set to the local host name of the server. So this is actually what you're going to get from auto discover when you open Outlook. If I go and talk to this server, he's going to say, hey, you need to go to this URL for auto discover. It's not in the GUI, and you need to change it from the command line.
Okay.
A lot of people hit this where they do all the URLs, they do the certificates, and then they go to Outlook and it still is prompting them with a warning. That's because this property is probably referencing a name that's not on your certificate.
Got it.
And what we want to put here is autodiscover.contoso.com, because that will also be load balanced.
That
balance.
Was a part of the certificate. Yeah. So yep. How do we change that?
So what I usually do is I just copy this and I modify it in like a notepad. So I'll bring that up in here. I missed the L at the end, so there's that. And then I do HTTPS, and then I'll change this guy to autodiscover. I'm going to use that on both servers, because this is going to resolve to the same load balance infrastructure that I've got for mail.contoso.com. So I'm just going to do that. I'm going to up arrow to my previous command, and instead of doing a get, I'm going to do a set. It's like that infomercial guy.
Oh.
Get it and set it.
Get
and forget it.
Set it.
I think that's
forget
what it was.
It. Or no, it's like set it and forget it. But this is good.
Yeah, and then you do auto discover service internal URI. You paste that in, then you're good to go. It does both servers, right? So I'm doing a get on the wildcard.
On the wildcard.
Give me the 2013 servers, send it over to set. Now I just have to run one pipeline command, and I'm done.
I just love PowerShell.
Isn't it nice?
Yeah, it really is.
It's kind of cool with two servers, but you start talking 5 servers, 8 servers, then it's way better. You know, it's like I just did that on all those servers and I'm done.
Okay, great. So now we got certificates. We got the namespaces all set up, and you showed us this trick, which is such a huge thing to miss. And just real quick, can you do us a favor real quick? Some people need to use, well, hopefully not POP, but occasionally IMAP comes up. So you put certificates on IMAP. So we're going to run secured IMAP. But in 2013, IMAP, it's not turned on by default, right?
Right. So it's the configuration is there. It's all set up to go. But if you, if you just go into services, this might be a little easier for this particular subject. Microsoft Exchange services. So these are all running. I've got them sorted by automatic, right? Let's see the ones that aren't running. Or let's see the ones that are disabled, I guess.
Wow, you can tell you navigate a graphical all the time.
Yeah, you can. Where's the... okay, here it is.
Right there it
there
is.
There they are. There they are.
So they're set to manual.
You change
right
it to automatic.
Now.
Here they are.
Yeah.
Change it to automatic, start them, and then you can configure the settings or just use the default settings in the console.
So really the moral of the story is that if you need IMAP, get a certificate on there just like we did, but if you need IMAP, turn it on.
Yeah, turn these things on. They're not on by
default.
They're
not on by default.
And if you look in here in the console and go through it, you can configure it all day, but it won't work until you set automatic and start
on.
The services.
Okay, good. Well, let's talk about a little bit about client access services. And, we've been mentioning AutoDiscover, so let's just dive into AutoDiscover.
Yeah.
Because, we AutoDiscover, to me, is almost like magic, right? AutoDiscover provides this, bless you back there.
Bless you.
I'm telling you, this guy's going to get us sick. We're all going to be, so AutoDiscover.
We're dead. We're totally dead.
Yeah, we're totally dead. Diseased, zombified. What does AutoDiscover do it's like super cool.
So it keeps you from typing server information into Outlook. That's the most simple.
Remember the old days of having to go to a client machine? Because you could tell a client, tell a user.
The old days of trying to create all these crazy scripts that would update the profile or pre-create the profile or update it after the fact. This is nice because it will actually figure it out for you. And in fact, when we look in the profile now, we don't even see a server name in there. So it's very important that AutoDiscover works, because otherwise you're not going to know how to do this off the top of your head. And the other thing is, even if you could configure a profile manually based on this new way that we have it set up, you still wouldn't get auto-discover for things like Exchange Web Services, offline address book. So use auto-discover. That's the takeaway. Just make sure you're using that, because otherwise, you're toast.
You're toast. Right? Now, here's the thing that I like about auto-discover is that, at least internally, you really don't have much to do. I mean, it's ready to go, right?
Right.
And if you're external, if you want auto-discover external, you're going to need to put in, what, a public DNS record for auto-discover?
So we didn't really describe what we did on this last PowerShell command, and it really ties into that. So when you're internal, the auto-discover Outlook uses something called service connection points in Active Directory. What we configured on these commands are those service connection points. Each CAS that you install creates a service connection point, and it sets its URL to the local host name. So when you're an internal client doing an auto-discover, and we're Active Directory domain join computer, we're going to call AD and say, hey, give me all the service connection points out there. Give me the oldest one first, and then I'll hit that and try to hit that XML web service and get an answer back with all of these URLs that I'm supposed to connect to. That's how it works when you're inside. When you're on the outside, it goes to public DNS, and it tries a number of things. It runs some multiple queries. You know, it looks at your domain name, contoso.com.
To see if there's an auto-discover record.
It tries to go out there.
So what my job is I have to go out and put an auto-discover record into public DNS that points to probably the load balancer in front of the CAS, right?
Right.
Okay. You know, why don't you show us you want to just show us real quick what auto-discover looks like when it does its thing?
Let me do a little thing real quick. This is like kind of a one-off because we've configured all of these settings, and this is going to be a little trick. If I wait long enough, all of this stuff will sink in and it'll just work. But when you don't wait long enough, sometimes you'll find out that auto-discover is still giving you stale information.
Oh, okay.
So here's a little trick that if you're configuring this and you're still not getting the right URLs back from auto-discover.
Oh, I see what you're going to do. You're going to do, this is an IIS thing, boys and girls. He's going to
go to each CAS and reset the auto-discover app pool.
Sorry. You want to show everybody that again because I was on camera like high-fiving. So you're going into IIS, into the application pools. There's an application pool called the auto-discover app pool. And you're going to kick this so that the worker process restarts and refreshes its settings.
That's right. So I'm just going to highlight it and hit recycle. And then it won't look like it did anything, but you should be good there.
Awesome.
And then I already added the second server in here. I got to re-authenticate. But I added this earlier because I knew that I needed to probably do this if I did it too fast. And I wanted to be able to hop back in here and do it on both of them, depending on which server I hit. Because I might go to A, I might go to B. You know what I mean?
I don't know if you know this or not. I'm going to throw out a little IIS info, but there's a commandlet that will help you recycle these pools if you wanted to automate this.
Is that
process.
Right?
Yes, I
gotta get that IIS book, man. I'm telling you. Still waiting on my copy.
Yeah.
So here we go. We're on the second server, I think. I didn't get a little. Where do I go now, Jason?
Where's your little hoo-ha?
Wait
a minute.
Let me do a refresh here. I'm gonna pretend like I didn't hear that. Let's do this.
Oh, application pools. There he goes.
Reset the or recycle this guy. Okay, so now I think I'm ready to hop over to my client. Now, I've got Outlook 2013 running on a client over here, and this client also happens to be running Exchange 2010. So I'm not recommending you install Outlook on your servers,
okay.
But I am trying to be green and lower my VM footprint.
I see.
So
this is a green thing.
I put the Outlook on this thing so I didn't have to build a client machine because, you know, I've only got so many resources on my laptop that I can accommodate.
Windows 8 and Office 2013 are like awesome.
Right. So your clients are probably going to have Outlook profiles already configured, right? And they'll get redirected, but this guy has never had one. So we're going to run through.
He's brand new.
Yeah, so we're going to run through here. This first thing, hey, do you want to do this? You want to set up an account? Yes, I do. I'm signed in right now as Mike, by the way. So my administrator mailbox, if you recall, was on 2010.
Right.
This guy's on 2013, all right? I'm on 2013. So, yeah, I want to set up my Outlook profile, and I hit next. This piece here is just the discovery of my email address. I haven't actually talked to Exchange or done anything yet. Just knows based on AD attributes that, hey, this is populated. So we're going to try to auto-discover. We're signed into the domain. So we're getting a prompt here because we're hitting the oldest SCP in the Active Directory site, which is 2010.
Ah.
We only configured the SCPs on the new servers.
We didn't configure it on the old ones.
So,
I see.
So that's why we're getting this here. And that's okay, because you can fix that. And this might already point to autodiscover.contoso.com in your environment. So we'll hit next there. As long as we get green check marks, we're in good shape.
And if we don't get green check marks?
Well, then we go to lunch.
Okay, then. So, well, as this is finishing,
we
got green check marks. So AutoDiscover has now configured the profile for this dude. And hopefully, lo and behold.
Yeah, I only have two email messages in there. So once I open this, it'll be very fast.
Are we allowed to see what's in your email box?
Yeah, because there's nothing in here. This is just the lab.
Oh, this is a, okay.
This is a test
this
message.
This isn't like your...
You know, it's setting up all those things for the first time. This is actually an isolated lab environment with no internet connection. So it's going to try to go out and activate Office. That's not going to work. Let me do this. Check this out. I'm going to hold down Control and right-click the little mail icon.
Oh, yeah. Show everybody this. This is awesome.
Check out the connection status here. Notice that my server name is gnarly, right? It's a big, long GUID at contoso.com. The proxy server is mail.contoso.com. Let me move this over here so you can see it. Stretch out the screen a little bit. But, yeah, that's the endpoint that we're connecting to. So that GUID is my mailbox GUID at contoso.com. So we're going through CAS.
That's definitely different from what we're accustomed
to
seeing, right?
Exactly. So AutoDiscover has fed us that information. Now when we go and ask CAS, hey, connect me to my mailbox, we give CAS this, and then CAS can figure out, hey, where do we need to proxy the connection? It's not tied to a server name. So who cares what server it's on? That's the whole point.
So if you're moving mailboxes, like during a migration that we do at the end, we can still find where you're supposed to be.
And then once you're actually over there and we're moving you around, we need to activate the database somewhere else.
Yeah, we need to activate for a DAG or something like that.
We don't have to ask you to restart Outlook or anything like that because you're not actually connected to a server.
You just said the magic word.
Yeah.
You don't have to restart Outlook. It just
And if you scroll over here to the right, it tells you like what the connection types are. It tells you it's SSL, all that good stuff.
No, and that's good. This is a great troubleshooting and screen and thing to check. Yep. So that was the left control and right click on the icon, right?
Yeah, you hold down control, and I'm doing left control, right click.
You
can also do test auto discover email config here. So if you do like a test right here, it'll go out. It'll hit that oldest SCP in this case, redirect us to 2013. Since I've already got the cert warning once, right, we're good. So basically 2010 said, hey, you're on 2013. Go over there and ask that guy what, we got the 302 redirect right here. Go ask him what your settings are. And then it finally succeeded down here. So what I could do we have time for one more AutoDiscover thing? Or
Real quick.
What I could do here, and let me just show you this, get client access server just on the 2010, right? We just want to look at the 2010 guy because we didn't do him earlier, right?
Oh, that's
FL
right,
URI, star URI, actually. Remember, he's set to the wrong thing, right? So let's just fix that real quick. Same trick we did earlier. Let's change that. Set client access server, AutoDiscover internal service URI. We're just doing this one quick and dirty. Come over here. Oh, wait, I went too far.
You're out of control.
All right, autodiscover.contoso.com. Whew, man.
Awesome.
So when that runs.
You've actually fixed.
Yeah, now when I do this, test,
it's all clean.
It's all clean. Goes out there, and it doesn't redirect me, right? Because 2010 is answering the SCP query, and he's saying, go directly here for AutoDiscover information, which points to 2013.
Awesome.
So no hops, no prompts for certificates, and, life is good.
I love that. Life is good. Yeah, actually, this was kind of like huge stuff right here. But, a couple of simple things real quick. Show us mail tips real quick. I got a slide. Wait a minute. I got a slide here real quick on mail tips.
Sure.
These can be useful. They were introduced in 2010, right? And mail tips is so when somebody's sending an email, it could just give them some information like aren't here anymore.
It's a heads up. Yeah, like that's an external recipient or, hey, dude, that's got like 4,000 recipients in that group. You really want to send that giant PDF to all those people at once?
Yeah, and this is a CAS kind of thing to configure. So why don't you show us a mail tip here?
Okay, so there's some that are configured by default. So this is a really good example of one where somebody has their out of office turned on. And if I go over here to compose a message to this guy, Abraham, put him in there, say hello. Notice how I got the little thingy pop up here?
Oh, yeah. That's the mail tip.
Abraham's not going to get my email probably because he's at the out of the office he's, watching he's
the
NBA Jumpstart.
Nice.
But he knew how to put his out of office on, so he's pretty good.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. I'm really impressed.
But that's an automatic one. You just get that for free. You don't have to configure it. If you install the product, it just does that. Somebody sets their out of office, it just happens. You don't have to go into Exchange and say, hey, I want to turn on these mail tips and that kind of thing. So that'll just work. The other ones that you had up on the slide, the large audience,
yep. All of those are just kind of ready to go.
Right. And then if you wanted to set like a custom mail tip on a recipient, you can do like a property on that recipient, like the mailbox.
So you can customize these. And let's say you want to do, the marketing group is on a marketing training event for this week. So if somebody's sending an email to marketing, they'd get the mail tip.
Right.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, you can do that. And you can just go to the recipient and set the mail tip and say, hey, here's the text. You can have some fun with that if you want to screw around with your boss. Go do that at his mailbox because you're in charge of the mail environment.
You're in charge
at the end of the day.
Too much.
Hey, don't do that. I'm just kidding.
How about OWA is pretty easy to use and pretty easy to work with, but there are some new features with OWA in 2013, and just a couple of the new features that are in OWA, like. I don't know, offline access, can you talk about this? I mean, this is...
Yeah, and it's one of those reasons that OWA is so different. So let's jump in there real quick because I haven't really shown what it looks like. Let me sign in to OWA, mail.contoso.com/OWA as a 2013 user. So we've looked at the control panel, but we haven't really looked at like what's the mail look like. So this guy's got a mailbox on 2013. And essentially, it's pretty much rewritten for the most part to support HTML5 and all of these improvements in JavaScript and HTML5 offline use type of technology. So that's been kind of a big thing.
You've worked with mail before. You can pretty quickly figure out the basic mail services in OWA. But here's the thing is that, a lot of folks want to be able to deploy a new environment. Maybe they don't want to pay for the Outlook licenses anymore. Maybe they want to go.
Absolutely.
But the biggest complaint has always been, I don't have offline.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So what is
the deal? I have customers, too, that have gone OWA, and now this is a huge thing for them. So, yeah, it's just the ability to really, if you think about it, this thing looks really good on a tablet. And that's you're on a plane. You're not really probably going to jump on wireless. Maybe you will, but if you don't, you can still open the browser and have the offline storage.
What is offline? I mean, how much of this is offline? What is it? We used to have these OSTs for the Outlook stuff. I mean, what's
offline? It's basically HTML5 offline storage.
Which I don't know what that is.
It's basically just downloading a cache of your mailbox data, and it's only a couple of days. So it's just a little bit. It's not like you're going to get a 20 gig OST type of thing like you would with an Outlook client. But basically, you can come in here and essentially say, come up to the top and say, here's my offline settings.
There you go, okay.
Hit the little gear up here.
Hit the gear box.
Say offline. And then notice you get like this thing coming in from the right like you would on a tablet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's really great on a PC, but it's awesome on a tablet. But I can say turn on offline access. Say okay to that. And then it's going to ask me how do I configure it? Are you the only person? Is this a private computer? And, we'll say I'm on a client and say next. And then basically it's asking, you might see a message from your browser saying it needs offline storage, needs additional space to work with it. you get the idea, right? So next, pretty much, hey, that's it. Bookmark this thing and you're good to go.
See, so, I think offline access is awesome. Some of the other kind of cool features is now we have these apps, basically, that run in.
Yeah, those are cool. I don't have an internet connection from here to show that.
To show the apps, but we have
awesome. Yeah.
The apps that run in there.
The one that's cool is the Bing Maps.
You've got the Bing Maps.
If somebody emails you an address, you can render the Bing Maps right in the email message without ever going out and like mapping.
And actually doing it, which is really kind
very
of cool.
Very cool stuff. Yeah.
And of course, we've still got themes in that you can, a company can customize and set up themes.
You can go to each CAS server and configure all this stuff. You can turn off the ability to, get into certain settings and things. You can do that at the server level. You can do it at the OWA virtual directory level. So if you did that in previous versions, you can still do that. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
you just go in there and turn off the things you don't want, and that's it.
And again, I think the biggest thing is yes, I agree with you. It looks great on a tablet, but for me, it's offline access. I mean, I just absolutely love it. Hey, you know, mobile devices, everybody's got a mobile device. Now, Exchange has really been a premier supporter of mobile devices for a long time through ActiveSync. ActiveSync is pretty much a standard that everybody is following. And, you know, we still have the same features. We can, you know, do a direct push of your email. We've had this capability for a long time. Are there any real big changes, though, to ActiveSync? And where do we set this stuff up now?
Right. Yeah.
In the new tool.
So there was a feature that was added in 2010, and you can get to it in 2013 as well in the Admin Center.
Oh,
if you go to
yeah.
mobile on the left,
yeah.
we have basically this option to quarantine and do device access rules. So, you know, if you just jump in here, we have the old mobile device policies, you know, that it's like, hey, put a password on a device password and things like that. This is interesting from an external kind of BYOD situation where you have people going to the store,
we've had some guys
buying
in the chat
their stuff.
Asking about the BYOD stuff yeah. where people are just buying stuff, coming in. So what is this quarantine going to do for me?
Well, if you come in here and you click on edit, here's your default settings. It's pretty much you create a mailbox, the protocol, ActiveSync protocol is enabled by default for that mailbox. And your ActiveSync setting says, hey, just let anybody, you know, auto-discover and create a partnership. So if you have your auto-discover record created on the outside world, you've got the ActiveSync virtual directory configured with the appropriate external URL, and you got certificates, and all that stuff is good.
We just went through
and the guy has his mailbox, his username and password. All he's got to do is use auto-discover to configure that device based on the defaults. So this gives you the ability to be in on that and decide, do you want to let that happen? So you can do a full-out block. You can do a quarantine. The quarantine's nice because you can set up an administrator to be notified when somebody forms a partnership. And, you know, you can come in here
and
say...
approve it.
Yeah, right. So you can come in here and say, oh, let's have the administrator be the guy that has that job. And then you can give them some custom text, you know, like, yeah, right, type thing. But you get the idea. Pretty much we'll be with you in 2 days or something like that. But the administrator would get the email when they form the partnership, and then they can approve or decline it. Or you could do an all-out block and then just do like a device access policy and say, hey, we're only going to have Windows mobile phones, create a device access rule, and basically configure that and say, let all Windows phones connect and everybody else is blocked. And then you don't have to think as hard.
About yeah. the control, but at least now you have some control. I really like the quarantine stuff.
Yeah, and I actually don't have the mobile emulator set up in the lab, otherwise I'd show that. But this is very easy to test out. In a lab, or you just download the emulator and kind of point it over here once you've done all the certs and the auto discover stuff. So,
well, you know what, Mike, this has actually been a huge section of stuff. For what
it's
we
massive.
Did,
yeah.
yeah, what we did, and I've got a summary screen up. But what we did right at the very beginning is probably some of the most critical stuff: going through and setting those URLs, getting the right certificate on for those URLs, and that little trick at the end, changing the internal auto discover stuff.
I mean, all right, yeah, that's a big one.
That's all huge stuff, yeah, right
watch
there.
Watch out for that.
Past that, you know, using OWA is pretty straightforward, but now the offline access with it, setting up mobile devices, but now having control over a quarantine and being able to decide whether they're able to join. I mean, a lot of this, you know, the client access server seems to me to be, you got to get this configuration
yeah.
set, tested, ready to go before you want users, you know, beating up on this thing.
That's right. Yeah, planning is key.
Planning. I don't know about you, but I'm getting kind of hungry.
I think it's a good idea for a meal break.
Meal break?
Yeah.
You think a meal break? Guys, we're going to take a meal break right now. And so at the top of the hour, we'll come back and we'll do more cool stuff. We're on our way to migration at some point, but we'll do some cool stuff. So grab some food. We'll see you in a little bit.